You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson. From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, AfterBuzzers. Bing is for doing, and this afternoon, we are doing Netflix original series House of Cards Chapter 2.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Thaddeus Massey, and joining me to the left is
Emma Kostandian.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophia Stanley.
And I'm John Comerford.
So, let's jump right into this episode. The stakes are thickening. Well, it seems as if they were thick when we started.
Yeah, but I thought they moved this one a lot faster. The clip, for me, the pacing was a lot better. I was much more into this. I mean, after the first one, I was going, the second one, I'm going, I really want to see the third. Now, obviously, we're not doing that because we decided not to do it all in one chunk. We're not binging, but I really I'm excited now. I'm going, I can't wait to see what's going on here.
Well, Frank, he has a plan, and his plan is actually starting to
It's in motion now, yeah.
And he moved so quickly and responded so quickly to his not being appointed the Secretary of State that he had to come up with a plan quick to upend everything that didn't go his way. So now he's really like focused. He's running with the baton.
And I think that on some levels, and I may have touched upon this last week, him being appointed to Secretary of State was almost him coasting. Right. That was his retirement. Now I think he's back in the trenches, and kind of like you said before, power is everything. And I think he's even being reminded of how much power he wields in DC. And I think he's astounded himself, because even he says later on the episode, like, this is actually too easy.
Right.
Like,
way they were destroying Kern. But it's interesting, because I'm going to go on a slightly different tack than that, because I agree with you that this certainly has awakened him and has put him back into, okay, here's what I can do since you're going to take me for granted. Let me show you how powerful I am.
Right.
But it would have been interesting, because they had a whole plan for Secretary of State and, Sancor, Argentinian offshore drilling and all this other stuff. It would have been really interesting to know what that plan was and what kind of power he thought he could wield as state. It would have been interesting.
Well, I think they might be working on that for season two.
Could be.
Right now. So that's going to be very interesting to see what season two wields, but we're still in season one. So, were you going to say something, Emma?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I can't help but wonder if this was all part of his plan, because it seems like he doesn't do anything without planning.
I mean,
so it's just a thought that was going through my head watching episode two, and I'm like, did he have this planned out?
Well, I'm going to speak to that, because I was telling Thaddeus before we started up, this last week, Thursday night, I was at the LA County Museum, and they showed two episodes, the first two episodes of House of Cards, and then they had a Q&A with David Fincher.
Uh-huh.
He was speaking specifically to that point. He was talking about Frank, and he goes, a lot of people think he's a chess master, and he's really not. He doesn't have everything planned out. He definitely has a plan, but it's not like he's 12 steps ahead. He might be two or three, but a lot of this he's just doing off the cuff and as it comes to him.
Right.
But that's how good he is. That's how experienced he is. He doesn't have to have everything planned out, and he's not a chess master. He's not the what we thought, which was
Bobby
Fischer that we were talking about last week.
Right.
He's certainly good at it.
The puppet master.
That's probably a better.
He knows how to work people.
That's it. Exactly. So, it's different than somebody who's a chess master that it's got the board. It's got 12, 20 moves ahead of you.
Right.
He just knows he knows how to move people to where he needs them to be.
Right.
Especially, we saw
very
great
gracefully
with Don Blythe today.
Yeah.
I mean, this episode was great.
And then what he has going on, what's interesting to me is how it started, and he was having lunch with the Speaker of the House, and Remy shows up.
Yeah.
And Remy used to be his press secretary.
Right.
And this guy's obviously very talented, because he brings in a lot of respect from these guys.
Yeah.
And one thing that was funny, how Frank mentioned, like, this guy is not using most his talent.
Yeah, Frank doesn't respect him.
Right. He doesn't harness his talent, because it's like power reigns over money any day of the week. And a lot of people, and I think this has to do with the old school versus new school thing as well, because
nouveau riche.
The new generation, I think, associates money with power, whereas old school doesn't associate.
Even the speaker mentions that, and he says, the lobbyists keep on getting younger and younger. I wonder if he makes
he probably makes
twice,
more money than all of us put together. So that just goes to show, like, he's, you know, it's like an old school versus new school thing. I think it's also cool that he's African American. I just have to say, because I think that's kind of a dichotomy in the whole scenario of the situation, which is not something they're hitting on the head,
right?
But it's more subliminal. It's just more kind of, it's more subtle.
Which part of it? The fact that he associates money with power?
Is it's the fact that there's a whole new school, and there's a whole new way of thinking, and there's a whole new psyche and approach to to politics.
Yeah.
So I think it's, they did great casting.
Yeah,
that as
did.
Far as
and,
that
but I'm wondering,
concerned.
Don't you think everybody would do that when you first get into it? If you're not from money or power, you associate one with the other. I would. I don't come from great wealth, so if I had great wealth, I might easily associate money with power, not realizing that, that's not really where it's at.
And see, I'm actually going to take a different spin on it. Ironically, in this specific situation, money is power, because Sancor wields the power for Frank to do what Frank needs to do, number one.
Right.
Number two, for Remy to have come into the breakfast meeting with the bravado that he did, that was power,
right?
Mm-hmm. And even in the stance that he's physically standing, and as Frank's about to introduce him to you know, the gentleman, he basically is like, yeah, I know who they are. On some levels, he didn't allow Frank to basically kind of bless him at the table and introduce him. He kind of cut him off and was like, yeah, I know who they are.
Right.
I'm coming over here because you obviously haven't been answering my phone call. So it was just a subtle way of interrupting them.
Right.
Because what does Frank do? Frank goes, oh, the breakfast is on me. And then immediately gets up to go in the hallway to speak to Remy. Because
how
Remy,
degrading it was, he calls it.
Right.
But let me ask you this, because you just mentioned that. So because definitely it was a show of power. But because of the way that Frank describes the money and power, he says it's a McMansion that in Sarasota that's going to be, you're going to need to repair it in 10 years. It's that kind of power where it's fleeting at best.
Right.
And would you agree with that assessment?
I would completely agree with that assessment. Mm-hmm. But then the fact that he says eight figures, and then he even threatens him and says, don't make me throw money at your challenger next cycle.
Yeah, but the other thing is, this is Sancor and all those people, obviously, that's what they do, because that's all they... Look, you do our bidding. In other words, we're going to go somewhere else. But they also forget that there's other money out there, you know. And, you're not going to want to throw away your donor, so to speak. But it's not like you couldn't get money elsewhere if you needed to.
Well, maybe... Okay,
they assume there's only one person giving the money.
Maybe the scenario is also showing people that maybe what's taking over America politically is... lower to middle class of people who are working hard to become public servants, as opposed to the, you know, because traditionally politicians have been the blue bloods that have just passed from generation to generation. Oh, my dad was a senator. Okay. Oh, such and such.
Yeah.
Maybe this is showing a new transference or transition in power. Just something to think about.
Okay.
Just something to think
about. Let's see
about.
How that
just
turns out.
Just food for thought.
Right.
So Sophia's wills are tending right now on that. She's like, I don't know. We'll see.
And the only reason being is, I actually think that they're doing two things at once. They're doing what you're saying, is showing that there's a shifting of the guards, and I think they're showing that it's business as usual.
Yeah, that's
the
what
facade
I think.
Is just changing.
Right.
Because when you really know DC, and I can't recall the name of the law firm, and it's probably made up, but for
Glendon Hill.
For him to be the age that he is, he obviously looked young.
And his partner. They just made a partner.
He just made partner. He was press secretary for Frank,
and
now he's partner. You can almost assume his pedigree. His pedigree matches theirs to a T. If not, it's probably better. That's why he was able to make partner at such a young age.
Right.
It just shows that the face or the facade is changing and maybe becoming
and
younger.
And that's kind of all the way. It's always that way. It's, you know, we're bringing in new blood. Things are changing, and everybody in the background's going, right.
Frank, I can't believe
and
you.
And I think that
go.
Really speaks to the metaphor that Frank said, which I love the way they said metaphor. And the power is, how did he say it?
In the centuries.
Power is the old stone building that stands for centuries. Yeah.
Right.
So there, go ahead, youngin.
Right.
You go ahead and be the whippersnapper.
Right.
Mentioning blood, I have to go back to the beginning of the episode. I'm not sure if any of you guys caught this, but when he was putting ketchup across the president's neck.
Across his,
no, that was actually,
cutting his neck in half.
That was actually Michael Kern. That was actually Michael Kern.
The guy
who's a senator. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought it was President Walker.
It was
Walker.
Was It was Walker.
I thought it was Walker. I'm sure we'll get corrected. So
okay.
You heard,
yeah.
Let's call in.
So whichever it is,
424-256-1633.
But I remember being Walker. But okay.
Yeah. I think it was Walker. I think it was a picture from the inauguration. Yeah.
Okay.
I think you're right. I believe so. Okay. I'm pretty sure. So. But anyways, you like the barbecue sauce across the neck for the blood.
Yeah, it just it adds to his play and what he's planning to do in the future.
Okay, so since you brought that up, I want to ask this to everybody because Frank says, you know what I love about people? They're so easy to stack. Obviously I get it, but I'm going, what is that a phrase I've never heard before? I'm sure I don't want to sound like an idiot, but help me out here. What is that?
I've never heard it either. Okay. I mean, I just thought I was like, oh, House of Cards. He's playing like he's wielding and he's bluffing. Okay.
Maybe when they're dead.
Yeah. I mean,
like
basically,
cordwood or what is he's it? Like I like your
killing
House
careers.
Of Cards,
he's killing careers.
Yeah, and so easy to stack.
I think that's what
they stack so easily.
I think that's what the symbolism was.
I didn't know if it was a phrase. I've never heard of it before.
I've never heard of it either. But so. I loved it.
Yeah.
I love all of his phrases, actually. Yeah. All of his little one-liners.
Oh, they were fabulous, this episode.
Diabolical dictators use that term.
Lines. Oh, my God.
Even when he's talking about meeting with the Speaker of the House and the Congressman, and he goes, while I imagine them their lightly salted faces frying in a skillet.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought the whole theme, you know, because last week we talked, you know, I really got an appetite, and you know, I'm a shark, you know, I like, you know, more than I love my wife more than blood likes,
like a shark likes blood.
Shark likes blood. Excuse me, but the whole eating reference, and then this, you know, sautéing him up, and by the end of it, he's working out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just there's subtle way of things are changing. He's more interesting.
It's so diabolical.
Yeah.
And I guess diabolical is what the definition is evil with a master plan.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Right. He's really diabolical.
I'm no Webster.
So he's just kind of like, the way other people will go, it seems like he's going in no end. It's like what Sophia mentioned earlier. She was like, I guess it's Secretary of State was supposed to be kind of like a retirement. He was supposed to get that position and supposed to lay back.
Do you guys really think that, even though he said that thing about the vice president, where it was his fun, because the way he said that about the vice president was his disdain?
Let me correct myself. Not in the way that he's like being put out to pasture, but that he won't have to work as hard.
Oh,
because he's been saying that he moves the sludge. He's a plumber. So for lack of a better phrase, just kind of when he brought up class,
instead
it's a working
being
class
the whip
laborer.
In the Congress, he's going to be, say, he's on a world stage.
Exactly.
So that's what you're saying. Okay, mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And it's more refined. He's going to be able to use
more
that
more befitting
aspect
of his ego and his talents.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see the worst of him now, because I think he's more pissed that he has to work more now than he ever has. Let's talk about the bill.
The education bill.
Okay. That gets leaked.
Yeah.
A lot of things are getting leaked.
Yeah.
And it's funny how things are getting leaked, and he's the plumber that keeps the sledge going.
Yeah, that's
true. He's, the education bill gets leaked. I guess it was a draft that wasn't supposed to get leaked.
He leaked it. He shredded it. He gave it to Zoe.
Exactly. And he has a meeting with Donald Blythe.
Right.
Who this has been his life's work.
25 years?
25 years.
Absolutely.
Separating the mama bear from the cub.
Yeah, I thought that was a
great analogy. And he has a meeting with this guy, and he completely manipulates.
Oh, he
situation.
Played him so well. It was a violin up there. It was great. It was masterful.
I mean, the easy thing about a martyr is that you just sharpen the blade on both sides and hold the right angle.
Yeah, exactly.
And let the guy basically. Yeah. Is it Harikari? Is that what he killed himself? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's basically what he was just setting himself up to do.
Great. And even better is my favorite part was when he goes, who, if not you, who?
Right.
And the look to the camera.
Right.
Like, because a lot of times, you can kind of see the look coming. You know that, okay, here comes an aside. And I wasn't paying attention enough to know. And then it hit me, and I was like, damn, that was a good one. That one really worked for me.
Yeah. So he's really totally manipulated that situation. But he needs a vehicle.
And you also need a willing person. Let's face it, Donald, he said his heart is not in this fight. You knew he wanted out. Please, somebody give me a way out.
Yeah. This is not his brand of politics, he said. I mean, this brand of politics for him is really where it gets dirty. And he doesn't want any part of it.
And
so.
that's what part I thought was great about that whole sequence, because you got Donald, who is great on policy but doesn't want anything to do with these dirty politics, and obviously Frank's really good at that. And then in the other room, he's got these upstarts writing the damn bill. He's not even doing any of the work. He's doing having all these upstarts do it. These
Stamper's,
wannabes.
Stamper's
absolutely.
Got these guys.
Exactly.
This is your home. Be comfortable.
Except for when the corporations actually write their own bill into law.
Right.
This is probably how it works. You get all your own. You're here. You do all the. Here's our bullet points. Go right.
And you need your own fourth wall, so you could have just done
exactly.
that.
Exactly. There it is.
So when the corporations write their own bill in law. Anyway. So he's got these kids next door.
Yeah.
Blythe doesn't even know.
Yeah.
He's just unsuspecting. Yeah. He's one of the good guys.
Yeah, one of the good guys, but Blythe totally. Is one of the good guys. Yeah, he's a good guy, but you know he's in denial like crazy. Like right. He wouldn't. The fact that there would be these kids writing the bill in the next room doesn't even dawn on him. He doesn't even want to know. I mean, he's kind
he
of
to be
he
out
loves
of
policy. He's just a policy wonk, and that's what. Yeah. Please just keep me there.
So it's a crap storm. It's a crap storm that he doesn't want to. Mm-hmm.
And he's
manage.
After reputation as well, just like everyone else in Washington, it seems like, because he placed Linda and the president against him as well, where he says, you know, they were talking about you, and he wants to know what they were saying, and he's like, no, don't worry, I told them, you know, you were important and you need to stay on. So, I mean, he just did an amazing job in that scene by having him shift the bill over to him.
And appeal to his reputation at being at stake as well.
Yeah.
And he threatened to pick up the phone and make a call.
Yeah.
To CNN.
So mad. CNN. Like, oh. And he's like, no. No, I don't want any parts of that. So Underwood is really pulling strings. It, you know, the funny thing, comparing being a chess master to a puppet master, mm-hmm. he has, you know, being a puppet master, I guess, you know, it is situation to situation, because if you're too far ahead, then you leave room to unpredictable behavior, because
right.
you can't predict everything everybody's going to do. So you can only be a couple steps ahead and manipulate yeah. people individually based on whatever the situation is. He even manipulated that group of kids. Not like it was hard, but
yeah,
that whole brain, well, you know what,
right.
in the room, you know, I talked to you, all my colleagues, your bosses, mm-hmm. that's just setting the tone for like
who
look,
you
little, look, you little imps, I can ruin you by snapping my finger.
Yeah.
So you're going to sit in this room and do this.
But I think, though, that it shows that no matter what, Frank is really, he deals person to person. He really right. is kind of like looking at people and watching how they move. So even mm-hmm. the minute that Blythe sits down, he sits down defeated. And I need to watch it again. But you almost see a smile on Frank's face. Like the right. minute he sat down, Frank knew he had him.
Right.
Because he was exhausted.
Right.
Frank had him. And I think yeah. the same thing even with the interns. There are moments when the interns kind of say smart little comments.
Yeah.
He doesn't even respond. He literally, all he does is he just looks at them in a way and they correct themselves.
Yeah. Right.
So even he goes, you know, how is it going? And they're like, we're doing our best, or we're, you know, or something. And they're like, we'll get it done.
Right.
You know? And I think that what he's really saying is, like, I really, and I don't want to make this reference, and I've been trying to think of another way. I'm not going to say he has, like, a godlike presence, but he does, and we'll get to it, you know, a little bit later when we talk about the homeless person who was trying to get into mm-hmm. the building.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he just commands his energy, like, he's fearful of absolutely nothing.
Right.
And I think that that wields itself in everything that he does, and I think that people are aware of that. So
right.
even if people can't intellectualize it, they can feel it by his stance, because he just is basically like, oh, I'm going to throw myself on the sword with
yeah.
no hesitation. That's something to be respected, and I think that's part of what Blythe was responding to.
Right.
That even though he wanted to be a martyr, he wasn't that courageous,
to be,
but
he wasn't
wanted
courageous
to
enough
be.
To be a martyr. He needed somebody to push him.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. But I think that's two things for me. He's exactly that. He, you know, Frank obviously knows the lever point that every person has, and
mm-hmm.
he knows how to push you just right to do what you ultimately want, like Donald wants out anyway. And he knows that. He just needs to push him in that direction and then tip the lever a little bit so he's in the tipping point. Boom, it's over. And same with the kids. Kids.
Interns.
These interns. Thank you.
Conjugal visits?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, he knows, and the same thing with Zoe. He knows her lever points. He knows that, okay, she's ambitious. She wants this. I know, how do I use that to my advantage
right.
and give her a little bit of what she, but I don't really care what she wants unless it gets me what I want.
Let's talk about Zoe.
Oh, my goodness.
Because Zoe, he hooks up with her to leak the...
Yeah, the news, the editorial,
the editorial
from the college paper from 38 years
the college
years,
paper
that, yeah.
from what was it, Williams College?
Yeah,
that,
I remember
that.
I remember
Michael
college.
Kern went to
yeah.
he was the editor, chief editor.
Don't think the
at
college
the school paper.
Yeah, exactly.
And she asked him, did he write this? Of course, he alluded directly answering that question.
Yeah, of course.
And when she gives resistance, he says,
oh,
remember
yeah,
this moment
yeah.
that you resisted.
And you said.
And you said that there was
no story.
Story. Her whole career flashed before her life.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so now we're learning that media create stories.
Well, it's true, though. I mean, they don't care. I mean, he's running for Secretary of State. Everything's a story to the media. And again, that's what we talked about last week. It's data. It's not necessarily information, because right. it's just stuff to put on, you know, because we got to have something to fill time.
Right.
Or, you know, put columns down. Right. I need copy. It's all.
And it wasn't even a matter of whether or not he actually did write it.
Because it used to be the press
where did you write it?
It used to be the press were the gatekeepers of information. They'd only put on what was newsworthy, but right. And now they just put on anything because they just want to be first.
But she does the same thing with Lucas. She uses his words exactly to get the story published by saying, you know, I could just tweet it and some big newspaper company would pick it
to
up.
To a link, yeah. I can tweet it to a link.
And he's like, no, don't do that.
Exactly.
He's like, whoa. Don't be a bitch.
Yeah. And why wouldn't it work with Lucas if it worked with her? So yeah, why not use those words?
Let me talk to Tom.
Right. And then she steps into the meeting later. That's she, later. Though. We'll talk about that later. Okay. That's after Russo gets sent over. But let's talk about Russo.
Russo. Corey Stoll.
Corey Stoll. Yeah. I love you, Corey Stoll. Yeah. Corey Stoll is the bomb. So they are going to need to... They're going to need to get somebody to substantiate this editorial.
Or to move the story along.
Right.
Keep it a fine.
And, of course, Frank can't be the one.
No, you can't have any hands on it.
Right. So they find this guy. What's his name?
Kapeniak,
who was on the staff with Kern in college, and I guess he has a conspiracy theory site or whatever. They recruit Peter Russo, Congressman Russo, Congressman of Pennsylvania, to go and meet with this guy. I guess they feel like he would be a good candidate based on his history.
Yeah,
his.
Well, and also
dark
they got
past.
Him over a barrel. They got he has to they do. He has to do Frank's bidding.
Right, he has to do some dirty work. So, they send him over to meet with Kapeniak.
How would we like him?
And what's crazy is they're
great
trying to.
Nutshell.
I'm trying to figure out. I mean, well, I guess we'll find out later. But why try to clean up his reputation by paying off the hooker who he was with when he got arrested for the DUI?
Clean up his reputation?
I thought about that. Go ahead.
Well, they're trying to make sure there's no.
Yeah, there are no leads.
I guess for his credibility, if something happens with the Kapeniak situation, that he's not. His reputation is questionable.
I don't know. That's I didn't thing, take it I think that far. I just wanted to make sure that he didn't get. She didn't in any way blow it, that they got to the police commissioner and got the whole thing expunged. So it's not even on record. Mm. Mm-hmm. The only person that knows it wasn't that it did happen that isn't been taken care of is her. So if she said something, then the police commissioner and all the stuff that they did, which can tie back to Frank, can be out in the air in the open, and then they're going to be exposed, and that's not a good thing.
Well, that makes sense. So, but I think they have bigger plans for Russo besides this situation.
Oh, yeah, they're going to put him in a vice.
Yeah, and I actually liked the scene before, or the scene where he got the phone call. I did like the toothbrush scene because I think that I started to get confused.
He's so
because,
grimy.
But no, I actually took it the exact opposite way. Like, that's intimate. Do you know what I mean? Like, for him to be using her toothbrush, that's a level of intimacy.
Yes.
Even the way that they were bantering, like, that's more than he's simply screwing around with his secretary or his intern or his staffer. Like, the way that they were talking, that felt very much like a relationship. And even, and I know it sounds disgusting, but even that he was brushing his teeth and then went to kiss her, like, that's what real couples do.
Right.
And I felt conflicted, and even when the phone rang, the way that she said, "Oh, answer the phone," it's because she's aware of his job, and she's not too needy. In the same point that he's a congressman, despite the fact that the phone's ringing at 12:43 in the morning, someone else may be like, "Who the heck is calling you?" She was like, "Answer your phone."
Right.
It brought a different layer to their relationship that it gave it more weight and credibility. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, but I definitely noticed that.
Because the way I took it is that the guy who's so. Doesn't care about her, is not even aware that it's her toothbrush, and is not, you know, he just picks it up because he's just
That's how I took it, too.
And it was I like this thing that's it's just, because maybe, I don't know, but the other thing I took about the phone call, real quick, is that I think it was setting up that, because we already know that she's jealous and all this other stuff from last week, and I think that he's going to get more of these phone calls, and now she's going to go, okay, who are you seeing? Because you shouldn't be going out on Congress business at 1 in the morning.
Right.
But if they had such a tight relationship and they had an understanding, why would he lie to her leaving the house what he's going for?
Because I'm sure they said to him, don't tell this. You can't tell anybody what we're doing, by whom, when, anything.
Right.
And he would then have to tell her that the whole reason that they have him in a vice is because he got pulled over with a hooker that he's not supposed to be whoring around anymore.
He's between a rock and a hard place.
And I don't think he wants to just share. He obviously doesn't share a lot of things with her. You know, right. Anything I share in here, it's just more lies I'm going to have to remember.
Right. And it's the nature of the job as well. I mean, he doesn't, quote unquote, have to share everything with her because of his position. I think she understands that. She's not going to know everything. Yeah. She's only going to get privileged.
You got to have plausible deniability.
To me, he takes everything way too lightly.
That's his flaw.
I mean, he doesn't take anything seriously. And having kids, you would think that he would act a little bit like an adult.
He has kids? I didn't know he had kids.
Didn't she mention about...
Yeah, I think she mentioned
that. Mom, that's great. I just missed it.
He has kids? Oh, I missed that too.
Okay.
I think she did mention.
He has kids, but it was like really quick.
Well, I mean, I like what you were saying, because he clearly doesn't take his job seriously. He doesn't take anything seriously. He's there to have fun, party, and please don't ruin the money train. Just keep it going.
Can a corporate sell out?
Oh, my gosh.
Roll.
Yeah.
Get roll.
Quite a spleef.
Like this. Yeah. I mean,
actually, that's seriously. Funny thing is that line bothered me.
Why's that?
It felt so, and I get it, because at the end of the day, it's this old stoner, so it's not like he's that sophisticated, but it seems so like a juvenile comment.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's 2013.
I know, but I think he was, honestly,
but he worked the guy.
My feeling was that he was trying to speak his language and, you know, trying to get him finally, because it did work. Let's face it, right afterwards, he said, okay, if I did call in this story, how would I do it? So
he comes.
I think he was just trying to play the guy.
Yeah, he comes with the liquor and the drugs, and... You know, I think it was really funny how Kopeniak told the chick that was with him to get dressed. Like, oh, we have company. No. This is real company.
Yeah.
Like, because she's obviously used to people coming over and just sitting there naked.
Because that's how you ladies just lounge around, right?
Right.
Yeah, I hope
that's right. Who is it? It's just Ron? Yeah, come on. Whatever. Okay.
Man, they had a good time, though, didn't they? A nice bender?
But again, and maybe I'm the romantic on the panel. But again, when he comes back, the way that the staffer, and how come I can't remember her name? Does anyone remember
Christina?
Christina, thank you. Christina was concerned, because obviously she's like, where is he?
Yeah.
You know, just even like how he said to Stanford, he had meetings. We don't know if he really called in like he had the flu.
Right.
And the minute she looked at him, she's like, wait, you're high.
Yeah.
And the way she said it, yes, I think it was from a self-serving place. Like, you told me you wouldn't do this.
Right.
Again, meaning she knows that he could spiral out of control and obviously then, you know, pick up hookers and so forth and so on. But there was a concern there.
Absolutely.
And even the way that he kind of pushed her off, he seemed defeated.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like he was someone who had just gone on a bender and was kind of like, yeah, had a great time in the Berkshires. There was self-loathing in the fact that he basically has this underling basically looking at him with disbelief and kind of, what's the word? Like, she doesn't respect him.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
because you don't want anybody doing that, because then you might have to face it yourself.
Right, exactly. And with him going down there wasn't organic. He was sent down there because he's
an errand boy now.
Right, exactly. So now he's somebody's bitch, and he has to go and do their bidding. And it's like, what do I do? It's not like, oh, I like this guy, I want to go hang out with him. And it was just an organic
time.
He has
to go do it, and he probably hates doing it, as you just mentioned.
Exactly.
But also, if I'm going to go do it, I'm going to have some fun.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, the
and then, of course, like you said, the last thing he would want is to face the fact of what he did. So he doesn't want somebody, in his mind, nagging him, but really pointing out, hey, look, you're screwing up big time. Nobody likes that when you're in that position, because you would then have to face facts and go, I'm screwing up royally.
Right. So let's not neglect talking about Claire.
Oh, okay. Let's move on to Claire.
Yeah, let's move to Claire just briefly.
Steely Claire, cold.
She's cold as ice. That's her soundtrack. We talk about movie soundtracks.
Yeah, exactly.
Her own soundtrack, that's her. I mean, she just is like, eyes are still everywhere you go.
Man.
Everywhere you go, it's just like.
And you know, she's so regimented and routine. She's got the thing. She's like, I'm running here. I get the coffee here. I get the bum, 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 bum.
She's
But what do you think about her decision to let Evelyn do all the firing? I mean, I thought it was smart, because why should I do it? I mean, especially if I know at the end of it, I'm gonna can you too.
I mean, was it that she knew? See, this is the thing.
I think she knew last week.
She knew she was gonna can Evelyn too, or was it that after Evelyn said, "I 100% disagree with this, you getting rid of everybody," and then the explanation she gave, she says, "I have to alleviate any doubt that I'm making the right decision,
and I can't have anybody talking amongst the ranks." Whatever.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So,
but I thought it was said
after that.
Well, last week I was thinking, man, if she keeps talking like this, Evelyn's gonna dump her. That's what I was thinking.
That's what I thought. So
I'm not. Excuse me. Claire's gonna dump Evelyn.
But I think it was, it wasn't until they were talking in her in Claire's office where, even if you look at how Claire's talking to her, she's turned away, talking to the wall, while Evelyn is sitting right in front of her. And having said that, she doesn't agree with her 100%. Was like, okay, I can't have you in my staff, especially being an office manager where you manage the office while I'm away.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could get
but
the whole...
So are you saying that she didn't know when she... Because I know she, when she walked in that, I knew... I think she knew she was going to fire her well before that.
I think she knew from the very beginning. And I think she's so cold, she let Evelyn hang herself.
Yeah.
And the fact that she even said it, that was even more cold.
Right.
It would have actually been more of a humanitarian response or kind of anything if she had basically just said, you know what, like, I need to bring in new people, you're part of the old guard, I'm switching teams.
Right.
But she had to use her own words against her. I think she was just literally waiting for her to say something that she could throw back in her face. But from the very beginning, she knew. And I think that the reason she didn't fire the people herself is because I think she doesn't give a hoot.
Right.
And I think that she is uncaring, because at the end of the day, to have an office manager fire 18 people that potentially were there for 10 years and to in no way think that that has any type of an effect on you feeling personally responsible for the lives of 18 people, and then to turn around not even a week later, that same day, within 2 minutes, she could have at least given her a week.
But she wanted them all fired by lunch, and then she's not giving you till Friday.
But she's the head of this organization. Isn't that what you do? You hire people to do what you don't have to or don't want to? Isn't that why you do that? And if you're going to fire people in clean house, don't you do it all at once? Well, why string it out?
No, that makes sense.
Rip the Band-Aid.
I think it was more of just her attitude and her tone and her vibe.
Oh, no, she's cold. I mean, again, I'm thinking, you know, yes, it's cold and all that other stuff, but if you're going to do it and you have to do it, the way to do it is just do it. Get it done.
I think John's right, and I think that they're doing this on purpose, because what they're doing is they're juxtaposing the fact that she is cold as ice and is obviously a savvy business person with our perception of a nonprofit.
Right.
So that's why I think Evelyn...
Washington nonprofit.
Right. Very true. But I think that's why nonprofit. Evelyn is the voice of the nonprofit, because in essence, a nonprofit is supposed to be for the people.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why even she says, let's stay in our lane, like, I don't think we need to grow so fast, so forth and so on, and even reiterates, like, some of these people have been with us since the beginning, meaning loyalty and honor and respect and helping other people. That's what's important to Evelyn. But for Claire, it's like, no, I have a bottom line, I have an agenda. So just like John said, that's her role, is not to get her hands
dirty. And remember,
dirty.
We don't know what the plan was. So, I mean, we don't really know what she's trying to achieve here.
Once Sandcorp came in.
Absolutely. They were supposed to big old check.
So everything did get upended because of that.
And I don't know what the... I mean, obviously the plan was to put wells in... Was it Africa? Is that what we were doing?
Mm-hmm.
But there was also...
Yeah.
So who knows? But I don't know what else is involved. And I don't know what the new plan is. I just know that... You know, but... Did you see any cracks? Because, you know, when Evelyn finally left, you know, they stayed on her for that. And I thought, okay, there's a little something going on there.
Right.
And then later when she's at the Starbucks or whatever the heck it is, getting her coffee, and she sees the older lady trying to work the register, and she realizes, oh, okay, that's Evelyn, basically. And I think she's thinking that's me. I think that's why the whole rowing machine, her status is so tied to her husband. I mean, the fact that she didn't get that check is because her husband didn't get Secretary of State.
Correct.
So her status is completely tied to his power, his standing. So if not him staying healthy, I could be Evelyn, or worse, that woman at the register.
Right. Well, I think there's two sides to that. I think that she felt empathetic towards the lady. She felt like, yes, that could be me. At the same time, I also felt like, at the same time, she felt like, I made the right decision. If I'm going to move forward, I have to bring in new, fresh blood.
Oh.
Wow.
I think she was, to me, I took it as in she was annoyed having to deal with that. Because just to look on her face and waiting for, you know, for this lady to ring
having
her
no
up.
Patience.
And she wasn't able to. The look on her face seemed like she was annoyed. But after she laid off Evelyn, I liked how she went out into the middle of the office and announced to everyone that this is the changes. Mm-hmm. Here's what, you know, why it had to be done. So there is no assumptions to think otherwise. So I think her going into the middle of the office in a way
kind of explains to everybody like what's going on.
Yeah, but,
like, but still told them, like, I'm the boss.
Yeah, right. But I don't know that they had any confusion about that because she is the boss.
Right, they know she's like, the boss. But she had to make
for it, office gossip, for anyone to start talking.
She had to do something, so make some kind of announcement.
Did anybody think that was weirdly shot and staged? I mean, the fact that she was talking.
Because the office is, like, set up in, like,
it's like, why didn't she bring them all in or something? It just seemed odd. It was obviously a specific choice. It's just odd to me.
It was the way her office is, like, I guess, set up in the middle. So she has office on that side of her office.
No, I get that. But, I mean, why not? Because usually you would bring them all in say your thing. But then she was, you know, I thought, well.
I think it shows that she's not the leader. I think the metaphor is that she hasn't been the leader, that she has been the symbolic figurehead. But for the most part, Evelyn has been the one who ran the office.
Exactly.
And that's why she was the one who had a face-to-face and fired people. So literally, it's that she's in the middle. Mm-hmm. So she, think about it. She was in the middle office, and was talking but wasn't connected. So I agree, John. A normal person would have gathered everyone together.
Interesting.
To the point where I don't even think she knows people's names.
I would agree with that. Right. She probably doesn't know everybody.
Yeah, because the way that they responded, they kind of were like, "Why is this lady talking?" Not like, "Ooh, our boss
my
is now talking."
Always open.
Right. And 18 people just got fired. It was kind of like, "All right, we're just gonna get the minute you stop talking, we're gonna get back to work." And I think that's why the phone call was so important, because they still picked up the phone and kind of looked at each other like, we're just going to keep doing our jobs.
That's what I mean, because I think Evelyn took the mother role in the office probably and
clearly
was very nurturing to people, and she cared about them. She didn't want to let them go, so she had to step in, and right after she let Evelyn go is let them know who's your real boss, even though you guys may have been reporting to Evelyn or she's been managing the office, but I'm the boss.
And I think I'm going to piggyback on what John said in terms of the fact that a large part of Claire's identity and specifically her career is tied to Frank. I think that's why she made that comment. Mm-hmm. I don't want to outlive you by 25 years. She's obviously going to outlive him. There's obviously a big age difference. But basically, there's a difference between outliving your husband when you're going out on top. So meaning the wife of the former Secretary of State, and presumably now her nonprofit is, you know, a huge nonprofit. Then you're sitting pretty.
Right.
But if he doesn't get his act together, she's now potentially seeing a life like Evelyn where she's going to outlive her husband by 25 years and have no status and, more importantly, no power in Washington, D.C.
Right.
That's what I think. I do. I mean, that's what I said. I think. I think she's the Lady Macbeth and, you know, the whole thing. She's going to rue the day. And
I think
she's got blood on her hands, the whole thing.
The dynamic of their relationship, that whole situation is really showing a lot with the dynamic of their relationship. And as cold as they are and are seemingly cold, I like the dynamic of their relationship.
Because let's compare it.
They work together.
Yeah.
They're a team. They're on the same page.
Let's compare it. Okay, so he kills a dog to put it out of its misery, and she lets somebody else do all the dirty work.
Right.
But there's a struggle of power at home, because he mentions that he doesn't like to be managed when she brings in the gym set and tells him that he needs to exercise.
I think because he's in Congress and he works in D.C., he got to the position that he got to because his loathing of being micromanaged and being managed. But when it comes to his home life, Claire is the one who can appeal to him because he loves her like a shark loves blood.
Right. He'll complain about being managed.
But at the end of the day,
but he usually steps back and goes, you know, she is right.
Right.
She says it too, where he says, you know, I'm too busy running the country, and she's like, not at home.
Yeah. Right.
As if he stops.
Right.
But yeah,
that's why he was found his butt on that rowing machine by the end of the episode. He was sitting there using it.
However, I really like their dynamic, even just you know, the way that they were smoking at the window together, and he even, you know, says, you know, you're scolding me. However, they obviously started out the scene with her running on purpose, because then when she goes running again, she very, very quickly comes up with an excuse and said, I had an early meeting.
Yeah, but why did she do that?
We because obviously she's doing something shady. Yeah. Nobody goes out to run. No, seriously, because I noticed it at the beginning. Yeah. No, so obviously she's going somewhere else.
Yeah, not only that, but we did see her run right earlier in the day.
Was she running somewhere, or was she just working out?
Well, she was just working out.
But she said, I'm going running. Right, but then when he goes, oh, didn't you already go for your run? She goes, no, I had an early meeting.
Yeah, she lies to him.
Usually, and also, too, it's like a little kid. When you come up with a response too quickly, because normally someone asks you a question, like, you wait a second. Mm-hmm. It's like she had it on the tip of her tongue. Uh-huh. That's like what little kids are lying.
But they're like two peas in a pod. Like, she doesn't like to be micromanaged either.
True,
so
but
if she wants to go run again.
No, but she would just say, I'm going to go run again. Right. She wouldn't lie.
Why is she lying?
Because that delinquishes her power.
And either she's doing something.
You know, she can say what she wants to do. Like, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
but where is she going? Because is she really leaving? Because that's, I find that, because that's the sex.
Interesting.
Where is she going? Why is she lying? What's the deal?
I don't know if you guys noticed this, but she goes to get coffee, right? After the run. But then when she's walking into the office, she still has a Starbucks cup in her hand. So maybe she didn't go running.
No. Remember, she goes running, right? Yeah. And then you see her with her running. Oh, now I'm getting the sequence messed up.
Because
she goes to get coffee twice in the episode.
Right.
Right, and one of them is when she's coming back from. One of them is when she's going into the office.
Yeah,
right. She just finished her run, and then the second time is on her way home.
Yeah,
that's why she has the cup when she gets home.
Well, people can leave comments on whether they think it's up to something.
Yeah,
yeah. Or why? You know, does anybody have a thought on why she lies?
Yeah, because otherwise the running scene would be irrelevant.
Yeah.
To me, this is an extremely smart show.
Yeah, because
there was
absolutely no reason at the beginning to show the running scene.
The coffee scene was important because it was meant to show Evelyn and how she possibly feels about that. Mm-hmm. The running scene is only important if it connects back to her going for a run towards the end of the episode. Yeah.
So
why show it if, you know?
Interesting.
We would know that she lied if you didn't show
Okay,
it.
So what do you guys think about Claire? If you guys think that Claire is up to something shady or if she is just doing her thing, or if we're scrolling up on the sequences, let us know.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll let us know.
Call in 424-256-1633. Go ahead, John.
The other thing about Claire is she Lady Macbeth? Is she doing it because she's just cold and now she's going to be regretful, or do you think she's just cold and she doesn't care? What's your thoughts on Claire? I'm fascinated by everybody else's theories because we had four different ones about Claire.
There's no way that for a show that is so intelligently written, for her not to have layers.
Oh, yeah.
So again, piggybacking on what John said, when Evelyn left the room, the camera stayed on Claire for a while, and her acting is on a completely, like, she's absolutely brilliant, because it's almost as if there was a moment, without there being kind of a change in her expression, that you saw emotion creeping up, and it's almost like she inhaled with her whole body and sucked it back in,
but
with so little movement, which showed that she is in fact cold, but not devoid of emotion. Like, they didn't overplay it at all. No. It was so subtle, but I think it was meant to show that she's not uncaring or she's not devoid of feelings. And to be in the position that she is, to be, you know, Frank's wife, there's obviously, even like you said, there's going to be a lot of nights like this. A lot of their relationship is politically or business-minded.
Yeah.
We have yet to see them be intimate in any way.
There's been nothing.
The most we've seen is when they were getting ready to that party, right? And he's behind her and he says, like, beautiful or gorgeous or something.
Yeah.
And even that was more from a place of a possession and not from a place of, like, I think you are beautiful.
That's because she's a skank. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I might use a different word, but I actually don't write the letters.
It's just ridiculously.
We're gonna find out.
It's ridiculous.
We're gonna see.
Didn't even make any sense.
Okay. All right,
moving on.
Okay.
Oh wait, but I think also too, but I think this is. I think that Claire and Claire's personality, just like Thaddeus was saying, I think, and John, is so important. So if you guys have your own theories, you can either call in. If you are watching us on YouTube, you can leave YouTube comments, but also you can also leave iTunes comments. One of the most amazing things that we have here at AfterBuzz, and a lot of you guys listen to our podcast via iTunes. So all you have to do is you go to www.itunes.com. You simply type in AfterBuzz TV and then House of Cards. Our podcasts come up, and one of the cool features is that you can subscribe. So by subscribing to AfterBuzz TV, House of Cards, your any of your smartphone or your laptop laptops that you use basically will alert you when there's a new podcast. And you can tell a friend because maybe they don't know that we do a podcast. And you can rate, comment, and subscribe. So if you comment, you can comment either on how well we're doing or you can provide your own theories on the show.
Mostly that.
Right. Yeah. You can provide theories on where the show's going, who your favorite characters are, and kind of make predictions just like we do.
Yeah.
So again, you go to iTunes, you just simply type in AfterBuzz TV House of Cards, you rate, comment, subscribe, and definitely tell a friend.
Yeah.
Most definitely. I want to go back to, well, this is, let's go forward, because after the kids, they drafted up the memo. I guess they were like, do we have history here?
And drafted the education bill.
So then he asked, exactly, education bill. He sets up a meeting with Linda Vasquez to meet with her.
Yeah.
And at this point, Michael Kern is already out of it.
Yeah,
he had his meeting with, he had his interview with Stephanopoulos.
Oh, God, that was beautiful.
Oh, brilliant. The Stephanopoulos interview. We'll have to go back to that if we have time.
And he gets chewed up. He couldn't answer the question.
It's like a train wreck.
He's laughing. Oh, my gosh, we got him. Bullseye. It's a wrap for this guy.
Anti-Defamation League. I mean,
but also, it shows why they didn't pick Frank. I have to touch upon this. Because he's a puppet. He really is. What did Samford say?
Frank's
he's a unicorn?
Puppet?
No. Sorry. Kearns was a puppet. Because what did Samford call him? A unicorn that shoots rainbows?
Stamford.
So really what it's saying is that Michael Kearns was simply just the facade.
Right.
And that the White House was going to be able to move him in any which way they wanted.
Yes,
that's why even Vasquez obviously feeds him the line of trickle-down diplomacy, and he, word for word, is like, trickle-down diplomacy.
Yeah.
And so that's why when George Stephanopoulos throws him a curveball, he laughs. Like, are you kidding me?
He implodes, man.
Right, that was the most immature reaction because obviously he has no substance.
Yeah.
If the line's not being fed to him, he doesn't know what to say. And to laugh when you're in a nervous situation is, on some levels, a sign of immaturity.
Yeah, there it is.
And that's what it showed, which is exactly opposite to Frank.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Frank's reactions are extremely calculated, and Frank would never let you see what he's thinking inside without expeditiously thinking about it and then presenting in a way that is beneficial to him.
And I think that Kern, although, you know, being a nominated or being considered for the position, I think he, in his mind, was not savvy enough to know that he has to still seal the spot. It's like he feels like, oh, they want me, then it's going to be kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
Kind of like Russo?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Just maybe a little more sophisticated.
Maybe he's not a degenerate. No,
right, just not degenerate.
But it's great to see him implode on Stephanopoulos.
That was great.
And here's the thing. I'm going, this is great. It makes great TV. And why the hell does that not happen in real life? Stephanopoulos, where are your follow-ups?
Because Fox TV covers it up. No, I'm just kidding. I was just joking.
I'm like, let's go back to Linda.
So he says, now we have the real. She says, you know what, Frank? We still need you in Congress.
Yeah.
Like, she thinks that he might be suggesting to maybe opening for Secretary of State.
But maneuvering. Let me back up a little bit. She is so condescending. First of all, she goes, I'm very impressed, Frank. Like, I've been doing this for the last however many years. Like, what, you thought I was going to present you with crap?
Right.
And then she goes, oh, so I apologize for everything. So again, now she's starting to feel guilty,
I feel she's genuine when it comes to it. I think she's just a hardcore B.I.
Well, that's how he describes her.
She's hardcore.
But then
she's
don't apologize. But then can I say something? But then I would prefer that than don't apologize.
Mm-hmm.
No, seriously,
because
don't apologize.
She knows it was dirty how I went down with Frank.
No,
she knows.
Because in a weird way, that's exactly what Frank wants, because that's when Frank slipped in the question.
The minute she apologized,
that allowed him to go, no need to apologize. So who are you thinking now that Kearns isn't available? And then that allows her to get a little bit uncomfortable and go, oh, well, we still need you. And he goes, I would never. I have this education bill to do.
Right.
But I was just curious.
Exactly.
Think about it. He does it every single time.
Right.
He lets you.
I don't think she was apologizing, not really legitimately. I think she was just apologizing to, quote, mend the fence and just, you know. But I didn't really believe it was sincere. But, I mean, I'm sure other people have different opinions on that.
No, I feel a little sincere. And the reason I feel sincere because Frank actually did work. They wanted to get this bill on the floor in 100 days.
He delivered.
So he actually did the work,
yeah,
and it's good.
Right.
Okay, so the proof is in the pudding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, man, he actually stepped up and did this. So maybe he is actually displaying
but we can't,
that he doesn't have hard feelings.
But you can't discount Sophia's point. She is definitely condescending.
she is condescending.
But he feeds into her ego, and I think that's
he
the reason
does.
Why
her.
She apologizes, because he says, I brought it to you first. I want you to take a look at it. Mm-hmm. And then he says, no, why don't you take it to the president?
Oh, yeah.
So
that was a
and that also fits her ego, because it's going to make it seem like she produced it, and she's going to look good. And it's like,
I just thinking about
it, Mr. President.
I think
stroking each other like crazy. I'm going, oh my god, this is what you have to do to get stuff done.
It's like Hollywood.
That's what you got to do.
It's just like Hollywood. Hollywood and DC are like twin brothers.
But he's so coy with the way he plays the whole Catherine Jenner. Well, it wouldn't be my first idea, but it's not a bad idea. Not the worst idea is whatever he says.
Now, well, we did need to talk about that. But one thing I want to mention was, mm-hmm. remember when the intern... Oh, are they interns? No.
They're the interns, not interns. They're writing the bill?
The staffers, the young staff, first started working on the bill.
Sure.
And one of them was actually reading something in there about the unions. And she's like, should we take that out? He's like, no. Leave that in there.
I'll take care of the unions.
I take care of the unions. Yeah. So... that stuck out to me. It's like, what's going on with the unions, and what does Frank have up his sleeve as far as that's concerned? And I'm sure everybody might have an opinion, but that stuck out to me.
That was good.
They don't do anything just to write it, so obviously.
And I'm sure it could have been just to show, hey, look, you don't know everything. Just do what I tell you, because I've got the whole thing handled and figured out already. Might be just part of that, but I think it's going to be. We'll have that come later. I'm hoping that'll.
Or it might just be another obstacle he's going to show Linda or the president that he's able to overcome by leaving it in there.
Right. Or is he booby trapping it on purpose so he can later do something else as far as like, no, leave that in.
Yeah. Could be. That's great.
Or does he really want to do something with the unions?
I don't know.
Or is it just about the bill?
I hope he's doing something to set it up. That's great.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that too.
So anyway, Linda Vasquez. No, we talked about Linda Vasquez. Let's talk about... this new potential Secretary of State Catherine Durant.
Well, we don't know a lot about her just yet. She looks pretty good, though. And they certainly talk well of her.
Yes.
Speak well of her.
Yes. And he's already planted a seed with that.
Yeah.
And then he had another meeting with Zoe Barnes.
Yes. Ooh. Very well shot. Zoe nicely composed.
The shot of the metro
was
absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
It's an interesting interesting little thing. The first time they meet, they're in the museum somewhere, and there's a little rowboat. There's just the two of them in there. And now we have a new thing. It's the train, and so a whole other mode of locomotion, so to speak.
Right.
Pardon the pun. But now we're moving a lot faster. And he even still has his little thing, hop on because the train's leaving.
That's the last one.
It's
like, and the nice metaphor there, you better hop on this because the train is leaving the station. If you're not on it, you're screwed. So is your career.
Right.
So.
And again, if you notice, the way that he almost comes out of the shot and comes back in the shot, there's something about him that's jarring, right? Because you can almost feel
off-putting.
His presence. It's off-putting, thank you. And the way that he turns to her and he goes like this and almost he makes her head go up, he doesn't touch her.
Mm-hmm.
Again, puppet master.
Yeah.
Right.
Watch his body language on with the homeless guy, with her before when she's like, he's like, remember this moment when you said X, Y, and Z. He steps forward.
Yeah.
Watch when he really is playing puppet master. Watch how he changes the physical presence of who he is is a lot more commanding than his normal kind of jovial facade that he's showing to everyone
else.
And even
speaking to the way he's using his body, even when he's with Donald, I know we've already talked about it, but in the scene with Donald and he's doing the whole falling on the sword thing, the way he was using his body there and slumping in the chair, all those things, he's really got a good command of that.
Yeah, so we're not going to call him Bobby Fischer anymore. We got to call him Geppetto.
Until we hear otherwise, sure, you go right ahead.
I'm just saying.
Right ahead.
But
I was talking about the train and everything's moving much faster. He even said that to Catherine. He said, "All right, get ready because things are going to move a lot faster now." I even felt that when we opened up our discussion. I said, "This is already moving faster," and I assume they'll keep that pace going, or at least probably increase it.
Also, one thing I liked is that how going back to Donald Blythe, like you mentioned, how. It's almost like he's trying to convince Frank to take the position or
be
the face of the bill.
Yeah.
He says, no one's more formidable than you. But although we know this to be true, is this the perception that the rest of the House has of Frank?
I don't know. We don't know.
Does everybody else feel that Frank is that formidable? Is that just like...
Everybody knows he's formidable, but I don't know.
He's a majority whip, yeah. So I mean, do they already have this perception of him like he's...
Well, that kind of goes back to what Sophia was saying, and both of you were saying, actually, about how his presence... He certainly knows how to wear the office well and his experience well, and so... In some degree, like with the interns or staffers, he doesn't have to say too much because he carries with him all that credibility and ethos and all that other stuff. He's got a lot of gravitas walking in the room.
I like how he's teaching Zoe Barnes a lot, and it's also showing that she, by following his lead, is paying off in her career.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's just like reeling in a big fish. Yeah. I mean, the Herald is a big publication. Sophia's chomping at the bit to say something. Go ahead, Sophia.
Well, because I think, even though I think that he is leading her, it's been so hard for me not to skip ahead because I think that they're gonna come to blows, and I think he's underestimated her because the way in which that scene when she's in the mirror and she's putting on her lipstick and the manner in which she comes out, right, and Janine automatically says, and I'm just not gonna curse even though I curse a lot, she's like, who are you screwing, right? And she goes, you're a Metro scrub, now look at you, right? So she's basically saying, like, I see your transformation overnight, right? Which she shouldn't have done. Never play your hand like that. Because she actually gave her credit for the fact that she's now moving up the ranks,
right?
See,
the thing about it at that point was that it's playing into her position because she's the lead political
She's also playing her hand. But the fact that she says, you have to be screwing somebody important, she told on herself, right? Number one. Because basically she was like, that's how I got my job. That's exactly where I went with it because she said it so matter of fact.
Okay.
Like, that's the only way that you could basically be getting your information is that, like, almost from a place of knowing.
Right.
And even look how she looked at Lucas. Mm-hmm. There's a backstory there. They at one time were screwing, right? Mm. And she now, and we don't know if this is true or if Zoe ever has, now she also looked at Lucas like, wait, are you
interested?
Screwing? Are you interested? Because now she's the new young upstart, and the way that she commanded that interview?
Right.
Like, it was almost like the minute, like, a guy's telling her, don't go above conversational, don't shift in your seat, and it was like the minute that camera came on, she was so natural and so comfortable and so charming.
And you could see the nervous before he went, she was like,
yeah.
Hi, I'm she was just like on point with it.
Completely.
She was like, oh, I'm glad to be here.
And she was so personable. Even the comment about I would wave to my mom if the producers didn't tell me not to shift in my seat. Mm-hmm. So it made her likable.
Right.
Like, it made her all those things where, and I think that's even why Frank, even I think for a moment, was like, huh.
Impressed.
Exactly. I think he was impressed.
Because he came out of the room after what he just met with, the kids about the bill.
Yeah,
they, and saw and they her were cleaning and up on the screen. And get them some Febreze or something.
Yeah, because the petting zoo.
That was really funny.
Yeah,
but he saw her on the screen.
Yeah.
During the interview, and just seeing her up there and seeing how she was handling herself, it was obvious he was like kind of taken. Like, okay, I made the right choice.
But I really want to know what our listeners and viewers think about Zoe, because she just kind of irked me when she walks in to the conference room when they're talking about the news, and just the way she just barges in shows that she has no respect whatsoever for where she works, for just, the hierarchy and how things are done.
She doesn't have
But she's getting rewarded for that. I mean, and that's kind of what you have to do. You kind of have to, defy a convention every once in a while.
Well, here's the thing. She's reached out on a professional level.
Sure, she tried, yeah.
She's tried.
To Janine,
she
especially.
Shows, she's tried on, like, at least three occasions to reach out in a professional manner. Mm-hmm. And I think they taught her that it's a F you guys type of situation. Yeah. So she's going to have an F you guys attitude, and I'm going to do what I have to do to get my career off the ground. You guys want to work together. I thought this was, like, a team environment, but it seems as if there's politics here in the office that I can't even get my career off the ground just to do work that I really should be doing. You guys want me to do these stupid articles over here, and I'm getting information over here. Give me a shot to do this. Why not? I work here already. It's not like I'm asking for a job, she's tried the conventional way to reach out to her quote unquote superiors, and I think they just basically taught her that she's gonna have to strong arm them. Yeah. That's just basically what she's done. She's strong-armed
I don't even know if she's strong-armed. She just went around them.
I mean,
out-reported them.
That's, I call strong arming in the journalistic world. Yeah, like, okay. She's kind of punked right. everybody.
Yeah. And again, I think that was her.
Her barging in was like, I'm the one.
Okay, but
like,
I got the information.
Yeah, she didn't barge in.
She didn't. But she imposed her presence outside the glass.
Definitely, again, and I thought it was interesting. It's the glass ceiling, glass door, the whole thing. She just wedges her way in because she's not going to let anything stop her.
And that's why I think what her boss's name is Tom. Yeah. That's why Tom is like, we see you, Zoe.
Exactly.
Like, it was comedic.
Right.
like she was only slowly, but it's like, we see you. But again, I think we've talked about it, the dichotomy between, I think, old school and new school. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that Janine called her a Twitter twat,
WTF.
She goes, and then it literally was like, how disrespectful are you? And at the end of the day, like, she wasn't saying anything to you.
Right.
Does it make sense? So why are you so threatened? Every time Janine responds, Janine is showing how threatened she is by Zoe.
And with good reason.
True, but she's still being included.
Right.
Because when the boss gets up and goes, you know, Zoe Lucas, then he like kind of turns around and is like, Janine, like, where are you? Hello?
Yeah.
Well,
not being shut out unless she shuts herself out.
But that's true. But here's the other thing is that I like both situations going on here. Meaning, so Janine obviously is jealous because, you know, she doesn't want anybody to take her position. It took me forever to get here and you come in here and you're doing it. No, of course she's going to try to stop that as much as she can. But also they have a point because she is a Twitter twat in a sense. Because here she is doing the bidding. She's not really reporting the news. Now she's making news.
Right.
And that's not a reporter's function, or at least it shouldn't be, or at least it hasn't been. Let's put it that way. It hasn't been up until now. So
that's what she's been learning from Frank.
Exactly.
Because Frank, now we're creating.
Yeah, exactly. So it used to be you're supposed to report the news and be the gatekeepers. Now, I'm ambitious. I want to create my career, and if I have to help you along the way, that's okay. And it's supposed to be our fourth institution, and you know it's not supposed to be doing that.
Just how powerful the media is.
Yeah.
And he told her, "You put that career, make that story, and you watch."
Yeah.
The name Catherine Durant come from the mouth of the president.
So you're
going to
be putting it in his mouth.
Exactly.
And speaking of which, should we go to the Stampers visit with us? Is that a good segue? Is that a bad segue?
That was a great segue.
Yeah, why not? Let's do that.
That was a creepy scene, wasn't it?
That was a very creepy scene.
We're talking about the hooker scene mm-hmm. in the apartment. The hotel with Stamper.
Yeah, open your mouth.
Exactly. Okay, this is weird.
It was funny when he came with the $10,000 and said, like, I'm into some freaky stuff, but obviously for
$10,000. I think I'm your wrong girl.
Yeah, and she gets up. She's ready to leave.
I wonder what the hell that means. $10,000. Right. What kind of freaky is she worried about?
That was a really funny scene.
I was creeped out by it. I gotta say, that was just weird for me. I was like, okay.
I really want to see them go. Stamper is obviously. There's multi-sized.
Oh, yeah.
I find him creepy for some reason.
Well, he has to do all the
he doesn't talk does, much, man. But just it's like there's a dark side to him.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder what his past is. I feel like maybe he has a past like Russo, too, because Frank has him 100%. He does whatever Frank, and he knows everything. He knows everything that Frank does.
But this guy's actually. His acumen is probably as high as some of those other congressmen.
Sure.
Because he works directly with Frank.
Yeah.
So his, you know, Frank wouldn't have this guy working with him. And like, he has the best of the best. I mean, obviously, like Remy used to work for Frank.
Right.
Everybody that works in Frank's office are like the best of the best.
Yeah.
Of everything.
Gotta be. Well, if you're going to work with Frank, I'm sure he's going to pick good ones.
So. I mean, I'm going to see them go deeper into Stamper's.
Yeah, it's great because I'm sure he knows all the closets. All the skeletons and all the closets and all that. So I'm sure he has a lot of leverage on a lot of people. And he has to do all that gritty, grimy stuff.
That's his henchman.
Exactly. And he's the loyalty involved and all that other stuff. But I'm wondering, because he obviously insulates Frank from everything, but I wonder how much he knows on Frank that could hurt Frank. And what would cause a rift between them? That would be fascinating.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel like he has a background, too, that we don't know about, that
Frank
is holding against him.
Absolutely.
But to me, they seem to work together very nicely.
They seem to be very symbiotic or parasitic. Maybe.
Yeah, they have a good relationship, and it seems to be a great working relationship, and they have a great respect for each other, and they play their roles.
I thought it was interesting that you said something about Frank underestimating Zoe's, because that's what he underestimated the president. And that was the one thing that Claire called him out on. Since when do you underestimate somebody? And you just mentioned it about Zoe, and that may come into play if he does underestimate her.
Yes.
And again, I think it goes and it goes back to, and I think they're very deliberately doing this, they're going, again, the whole difference between, quote unquote, substance and popularity.
Yeah.
So theoretically, again, if she's a Twitter twat or if she's, you know what I mean, it's, again, it's entertainment value. We create a story, right? That's what we do. We're storytellers, which is different than content in terms of reporting the news and, more importantly, sourcing it and making sure that all the points, like, are valid and aren't, in fact, made up.
Right.
And that was one of the things they really discussed about doing the series. They wanted it to be inclusive of the new media and how it's affected politics and how politics is affecting it, etc. So I find that part really fascinating.
And I'm sure our listeners and everybody out there in AfterBuzz land is learning a lot about DC.
I wonder how authentic it is.
How everything is works with everything else, and everything is scratching everything else's back. Media, politics, everything. Have we covered everything?
Almost. I mean, I just think the last scene was brilliant when Frank walks out of his office and Remy is right there.
Oh, yes. Again. Walking away from each other, talking to each other.
Right. Yeah. But before that, Remy goes, what a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And he says it from a place of knowledge.
Right.
Because, again, he's worked with Frank.
Yes.
So unlike Zoe, who kind of is like, oh, wait, were you Kropinski? Like, basically, there was a minute where there's a moment where she's like, she goes, oh, she has an epiphany and realizes, oh, you did it. And he was like, oh, gosh, like, you're slow. Which is different than Remy.
New.
Right, true. Which is different than Remy basically saying, like, I see you. Puppet master.
Yes.
I see the roller coaster.
Yes.
And basically that's why they have that banter. So basically kind of like, so is Catherine going to be on board with our original plan?
Right.
And that's why he even says, you know, I'm not a betting man.
Right.
And basically Remy confirms that.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
See you soon. Hopefully
he only bets on a sure thing.
But how do you feel about the ending that when she comes home and finds him?
Oh.
Working out?
Yeah.
I think that helps solidify in their relationship and how they operate, and it helps her feel justified in knowing that her husband, in every space and nook and cranny that he's in, and what he needs.
Twice now we've seen them.
He needs it.
They have these conversations where she's trying to push an agenda on him, and he doesn't want to. So that's their little pattern that they repeat.
Right.
Like, don't micromanage me. Don't tell me what to do. And then he thinks about it. And then he comes up with a plan, or he thinks about it and he works out. So that's how their little dynamic. That's what they play.
Yeah. And I think it showed that and for lack of the metaphor, like rowing, like he was going into battle.
Yeah.
Like really, because I think that's what she wants. Like she wants him to fight for their position in DC. And she basically was saying, you're soft, you're not prepared, you need to get ready to fight.
Get into
battle. And that's symbolically what it.
The nice connection between, okay, Zoe and the two boats, the two people in a boat, and he's alone on a rowboat. So I thought that, you know, and he'd already said.
I didn't catch that.
Already said. I only have enough power to save one of us.
Right.
So he's in this thing. He's in this thing all by himself.
And Claire did say to him, "You trying to say I'm not in good shape?" And she said, "I just don't think you're as good a shape as you could be."
Exactly.
Which is basically kind of parallel along the lines of, you don't usually underestimate people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're the man, but you're not operating at your full.
Exactly. He got soft.
Full go.
Mm-hmm. Right. He was waiting for his cush job.
He was waiting for that, and he was expecting it. It was promised to him, but he underestimated the people that he was working with.
And I think that his raw, animalistic, shark-like.
Yeah. Eating in the ribs.
Yeah. That's who she's attracted to. Yeah.
Right.
She's not attracted to this going out to retire, out to pasture Frank.
Right.
That's why even she says what she says. And I think that's what that scene was on the stairs. Like, she was attracted to him.
Yeah. Right.
Or else she would have just walked back upstairs.
Did you think that was the first time we actually saw any kind of
intimate
or sexual desire or something like that? Like, that she might be attracted to him in some fashion?
I mean, he was down there rowing in his slacks, for his suit slacks, a t-shirt that he probably wears under his suit.
That's why his shirt was right on the banister of the stairs.
Right. So he was like, he didn't even take time to change clothes to put on work. He's like,
just give it a try, man.
He's on the, he's fighting right now. He's back to where she wants him to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he looked good, too. See his triceps? Oh, yeah, he looked good.
Okay, so I think we've gotten hold of everything. You guys can leave comments or do whatever.
Yeah, and, you know,
as far as that's concerned,
give us your views on what else the show that you liked, or, you know, what else you want to postulate.
YouTube, Twitter, we're all there. Let's go to news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay, so I got an interesting tweet from Sophia Stanley.
Uh-oh. What's this? What is this?
Regarding CAA and the cost of the budgets on the episodes for the show. And the show's budgets were way higher. You want to go into that?
No, you can go ahead.
Okay, so the show's budgets were way higher than normal. They were like, what, $4 million
plus. An episode?
Like average, 4.5, like high. And wow. David Fincher went in and was like, we're going to shoot these like movies thing. So, I mean, it's the proof is in the pudding. I still don't think Netflix is going to give us the final number on subscription increase percentages and whatnot. But we do know that it was sold. They bought it for like $100 million.
$100 million.
So, but they spent a hefty dollar amount per episode.
Well, it shows. It's on the screen. I mean,
it does show. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. The show is.
Although
it
was interesting because, as I was mentioned in the LACMA interview with David Fincher, he had said that, you know, like in the big gala sequences during the inauguration and those party sequences, they really wanted, you know, 1,000 people there, and of course they ended up with 150. They had to make it look big and everything.
Right.
So obviously, coming from his film background, I'm sure anything he wanted, he couldn't. He had to make work and stuff like that. That was a fascinating thing. I'll talk about the more of it after we do the other news. Was there any?
That's all the news I have.
Okay. No, I think we have one more.
I was looking over some of the comments that were left on the YouTube video, and someone mentioned mentioned that we should look into the upside down flag.
Oh, it means distress.
Yes, but I didn't really look into it. I didn't see it, even though it's right on the cover.
Yeah, you didn't know. Oh, okay.
I didn't notice it because Frank is kind of like sitting on a throne and taking over
And if you notice his fingers, there's blood on his fingers. And okay, I don't know. A lot of people hadn't recognized that. Right. Really? Didn't see that?
Right.
So it's technically it's distress, but not in the country. It's just within him because he didn't get elected.
So you think he's
under distress? So it starts off. I think it's with Frank.
It starts off with him, but I think it's symbolic.
I think it's
country.
It's House of Cards. It's the House of Representatives. I think that all other things are going to be in distress. That's right.
A lot of things are.
He creates it.
Yes, exactly.
He's making it worse. Actually, he's correcting the wrongdoing of him not being elected the Secretary of State.
So real quick, some of the things that David Fincher said about the series. When they were hiring the directors, a lot of times in TV shows, you know, they hire directors, but they don't get final cut. And he told all the directors, look, you're going to get final cut. So it's not going to, like, we're going to, at the 11th hour, we're going to come in there and change everything. We're going to, you have free reign. So, and what I want from you is to see what other people are doing and say, no, this is my shot to make it great. I'm going to make it the best I can be. I don't care what it, you know. So he wanted the directors to each try to top themselves in the series, in the actual show that they were directing.
Well, they
and gave them final cut, which is unheard of. So that could be one reason why it was so expensive.
Is not having final cut, is that normal for TV and film?
Well, it depends on the director, but definitely TV. It's the showrunners and execs that get all the finals on TV.
Is.
But a lot of times the studios and film will get final cut. Depends on the director and what the contract is and stuff and the track record and all that other stuff. But it's unheard of for TV for a director to get, because usually they bring TV directors in just to shoot an episode rather because they don't know the full arcs and all that other stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
But that was interesting. Also, Corey Stroll, this one stuck out. Corey is not at all like his character. He's a very well-mannered, very prepared,
one of the nicest guys ever.
And, you know, when he was casting it, he goes, how could this guy ever be that guy?
Right.
And he goes, and he is, and he's great at it. And he goes, and that's what you have to keep reminding yourself that because he's a great actor. He wears it so easily, it comes off like he doesn't know how to compute the two because he's so not like the character.
He's playing the hell
out
of the character.
That's how good he is. So.
You got to give him shout. Shout out to Corey Stoll. You're doing a great job on this show, bro.
And the last thing I wanted to say about this, and we can talk more about it next week, but just for this time, David Fincher had a hard time. There's a learning curve he had to go through because he directs for film where in his words, well, I'll kind of paraphrase, he's trying to cram 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag because every scene, you have to cut so tightly.
Right.
In TV, you can see them drive up, you can see them get out of the car, and he was so used to not doing that, it took him a while to get used to that. And then he had, I can't remember which director, somebody else who directed everything for HBO, it said, no, you can let it breathe and stuff.
Well, probably
which is
also
why
because
we're having these shots. Go ahead.
It's a political drama.
Yeah.
So that probably has a lot to do with it as well. I know it's Scandal, they like write and don't they talk like
really
fast because they're trying to cram so much information because there's a lot of information
in that arena. But they're confined because they have to be on a certain schedule for network TV. They're not confined at all.
And I think that's actually the difference. And if you compare the two, Scandal is a very, very fast pace.
Yeah.
This actually breathes in a way that is more sinister. Like, when I watch Scandal, I'm amped up. Mm-hmm. There's actually moments when I feel like, not necessarily that I'm watching a horror flick, but that I'm watching a thriller, and I can feel the hairs because I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. And I think it is because they are giving it time to breathe and stretch out scenes in a way that you can't anticipate the next.
And they wanted it to feel more novelistic, so that when you you could, like chapters, read four in a row and come back and read another and then do two more. I mean, that's why they liked releasing it all at once. But going to Sophia's point, in TV, it's, you know, you want that adrenaline rush, you want that because that keeps people coming back.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they're almost like opposite sides of the same coin. Yeah. Both brilliant, but I think that Scandal is super fast on purpose because it takes you to a completely different, amazing place.
And
I think that this is
turns and,
and this is pulled out in the exact opposite way to do the exact same thing.
A little
to engage
more
the audience, to engage
in a different way.
Yeah, but in a different way to engage the audience, but from both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, okay. They're doing an amazing job. Yeah. Let's get to predictions for
predictions.
Episode
I don't have any. You know. Well, I was thinking about it because I was going to try to do a prediction. I go, you know, it's all out there now. So any prediction we get, if we're right, people are just going to go, oh, you just looked ahead, you know? And I'm going, well, and we even though we've said we're not going to do that, and then we're not going to do that, you know, you're not going to be able to prove it to anybody. So I don't really have a prediction. It was my way out. Because even if I'm right, they're just going to, oh, you just looked ahead. If I'm wrong, they go, you idiot, you didn't look ahead?
John, I know that's what people are doing. John and Sophia are deferring.
We're abstaining.
Yeah. Emma, do you have a prediction?
No, I don't.
Thaddeus, it's up to you, my friend.
You can wrap it up for
us. My prediction is we'll be here next week.
There you go.
Thank you guys for tuning in to this second episode of Netflix original series House of Cards. Oh my gosh, I can't wait till next week. I'm your host, Thaddeus Massey, and where can we find you guys?
Right now, you can find us on the big screen. Find me on the big screen with Adventures of Serial Buddies. We're in theaters this week, and hopefully next week if we have a great season.
By the way, John is in the film. He's amazing. He plays like three characters. This dude is out of control.
Really
talented.
Funny.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
He's talented. I need to touch him.
AdventuresSerialBuddies.com. You'll find all the viewings.
Sophia, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Sophia Stanley.
You can find me on Twitter at I am Emma K and on Instagram Emma_3xK.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Club Thaddeus. You can find me here on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for Boston's Finest, and Tuesdays 6 p.m. for NBC's Deception, and here Tuesdays at 11 p.m. for CBS's Vegas. Until next time, after buzzers.
Busy man.
Yeah.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.